You have to make entries. Well, this is a history lesson, a message, not a sermon. A few notes from scripture at the end. Stevie specifically asked me to talk about this topic. He was under the impression that our history might encourage us. So, and I think it does. For a number of years, when I was asked to speak, I used the opportunity to present lessons from our denominational history. Last year in January was the 500th anniversary of the Swiss Brethren in Zurich. So next year, it will be 130 years since family started arriving in Denby. That centennial was celebrated in 1987. And can it really be more than 30 years ago that Lisa and I joined Susan Ackerman, sometimes Robbie, Nelson and Catherine Bayer, at the white linen-draped table at the Yoders, at John David and Esther Mabel's, and we remembered our history and made plans for a centennial. How much we miss the Yoders, especially when I cannot get them on the phone anymore and say, what happened, or a point of history. Esther Mabel was wonderful for that. I don't have enough time to do this topic justice this morning, so I'm going to note a few ideas and leave a lot of stuff out. But let me start with what might be a negative, and I hope not to leave it there. But in the studies we did of our histories with this congregation, there was a recurring theme, and it ties into the sermons that Steve has been bringing. We have a history, unfortunately, of hurting each other, often with the best intentions. The positive, I will argue, is that being aware of our history helps assure that this is no longer us. As Steve put it, there are things we have let go on. Many of us are new, do not come from that time, and it doesn't pertain anymore. Disagreements with the Christian family can be exceptionally hurtful and damaging. So to illustrate, I have chosen an incident that is far enough back, and I hope a lighthearted manner will help it go down easier without missing the important point. For that, I'm going to need help. So, please to welcome the colony's founders, Z. Yoder and Isaac Kutzler. Welcome.
How does a church grow? We are farmers. We have large families to get all the work done.
Big families, big congregations.
But then the kids grow up and they get married and have kids.
There are not enough farms.
At least for the money we have.
In fairness, sometimes the economy wasn't good, and sometimes families moved away.
We are not the ones who proposed a trip to Virginia.
We are the ones who split off of the group who was looking at Williamsburg.
And we are the ones who were treated to roasted oysters by Dr. John Young, who told us he was selling most of the family's land called Denby Plantation on Warwick River.
A big decision. It wasn't what we had come to look at.
We agreed rather quickly.
After that, he wasn't so quick to feed us anymore.
Were we a bit rash?
So much for Southern hospitality.
A deal's a deal.
$10 an acre, 1,246 acres.
We both had large families.
These two Amish ministers followed the pattern of colonization that persists in some groups to this day, inviting families and selling land. Now, this is not great farmland. It had been plantation land. Years of tobacco farming ruined it. The first families who came here were expected to be self-sufficient and hard workers. There was no school at that time, and you could not expect the government to give you one. Roads were few, and eventually the local powers helped with a bridge over Lucas Creek that helped get goods to Indiana and the trains.
Let's face something else. David and I were both land sellers and ministers.
When money changes hands, some expectations are left unwritten or sometimes unsaid.
Seven first families were cousins of yours.
I tried for fairness.
A lot of people didn't come with money. We made deals.
I was asking for trouble. They also complained about my wool collar and my so-called secret desire to build a church building.
When there were 20 adults in the area, we organized the church in 1898.
We came from all over. It was agreed that Amish and Mennonites would take turns preaching.
When trouble arose, we sent a bishop from Ohio to meditate, but he took sides and called for David to submit the church for offenses.
It was February 17th, 1900. One of my supporters said, "If Brother Yoder wants to withdraw, why didn't you let him withdraw?"
We walked out. Most of the Amish
Contingent.
contingent.
You are Mennonite and we are Amish.
That's a direct quote, and that said it like it is.
Thank you. Bishop Michael came to listen and to accept attempt reconciliation, citing Paul before Festus as a model. There was a meeting. The Mennonites didn't show up. D.Z. Yoder stayed at Providence and then a small group at Kempstown before moving back to Ohio in 1904. Incidentally, when he preached here, it was still in German. Isaac Hertzler stayed around sharing preaching duties. Now, as you've heard, we started in division. According to J. Harvey Yoder's account, the finding of separation continued for some time, and it seemed to keep on until most of those involved died or moved. Providence eventually became known as Amish Mennonite and then as Mennonite and a sister congregation. It's been explained in the local history that in this area for years, if you owned a radio or in later years a television and you didn't want the complaints, you might consider becoming Amish. In this area, they were less strict on that sort of thing than the Mennonites. Amish or Mennonite, there was a strong desire to protect from the evils of the world out there. Secular media, secular dress, drink, smoking, joining the military, all the temptations. Within the desire for protection to stand against the world, there were many disagreements about the measures to be taken. An early minister and one-time bishop by the name of Daniel Schenck was known for listening and reasoning with the congregants. And that was seen as weak by some leaders, not sufficiently protective. So there were divisions among us. How is this supposed to be encouraging? Only that we seem to have come a long way. Let's consider for an example, what did a plain coat stand for? At one time, it was out of fashion and therefore cheaper. Within our group, it became a marker, a belonging. We learned, however, that this and other boundary markers could exclude. In some of our outreaches, at some times, we thought it right to insist that the newcomers, those joining us, would look like us. For some, that was too much, and we hope they found fellowship elsewhere. We did think to let a few things go. Doing so is not without pain. It is easier to be part of a group when there are distinctions. So, in the first years of the colony, Bishop George R. Blunk was a strong leader. He used Warwick as his base to influence the Mennonite church everywhere. He was known as the Oracle at Dinby. Whether you agree with his level of strictness and conformity or not, this congregation became imbued with strong outreach and missional purpose. I suspect that that is still part of our congressional makeup.
There is no vision, people perish. Proverbs 28:18.
Ground was broken here for a Mennonite school and college.
The pile of sand delivered sat for a number of years before the high school and college opened near Harrisburg.
What might have been?
Then there was Martha Brunk.
She believed in taking the gospel to those she met.
And she met a lot of people in the downtown farmers market.
It was a 30-minute drive, but she started going there to pay a visit.
She would meet and pray with them.
They started meeting in a house,
And church council sent the men to lead.
but she started it.
The Huntington congregation formed along the church lines in 1937.
Then there were Nelson and Dorothy Burkholder. Nelson had helped with the African American Bible schools in Denby for years.
The vision was for interracial church.
Nelson and Dorothy selected a neighborhood to make hundreds of contacts.
It was on a house on Madison Avenue, downtown Newport News.
Dorothy set out 50 chairs.
Two people showed up.
One was drunk.
Nelson preached anyway.
For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, Romans 1:16.
The Calvary congregation leapt forward with Lisi Francisco and his family.
They eventually brought an old C&P telephone building to Hampton and became one of the largest congregations around.
There are too many stories to tell. Missionaries, workers, ordained and lay people, evangelist tech meetings by George R. Brunk, assisted by family and many others.
Levi Weber and others sensed a call to use radio.
WRVA and Transworld Radio were among the outlets.
1950 to 1968, on the Rock of Ages broadcast, this congregation sang for the world to hear.
Ralph and Uzi Ziegler chose the state capital as their mission field.
They drove from Denby to hand out tracts and hold Bible studies.
In 1954, a church was formed on the east of Richmond, now First Mennonite.
In the 1960s, Denby farmland was being plowed under. Several families moved to Powhatan.
That church began to meet together in 1962.
Some families moved to Norgie or Toyano.
Williamsburg Mennonite started in 76. Truman Brunk helped pull the group together.
Truman pulled a lot of things together. He was bishop after his father died in the late 1930s.
He was actually ordained by lot. Six men chose hymnals and had his piece of paper.
There were so many good potential leaders that an element of chance could be used.
Among many things Truman did was to encourage new leaders.
He believed in training and sent many off to school to schooling in Harrisonburg.
Truman actually put a few nails in construction here. He literally helped build the school.
About 30 years ago, half the bishop and overseer contingent in Virginia Conference came at one time or another from Warwick River.
You could say he caused many long-term difficulties. He spent so many promising young men and their families away.
In many places, we are the mother church.
But there was one thing Truman was known for.
For the contingent plays, it seemed hard for our guests' creatives to understand why the community did not resent the bishop in those years.
Esther Mamble, he taught Christian discipline, but the 300-pound man working with you was love.
May Christian love always be part of us.
There is so much to tell, so many we've left out. WCRC, Meadowood. This is a highly inventive congregation, and I don't think that is fully our past. It is part of who we are and who we remain. Consider, we tend to be creatives, teachers, writers, and I just wrote in here medical people. We spent a decade on the stage. We love singing together. We quilt, we feed each other. We continue to help each other. We enjoy being together. We have so much to offer to anyone who comes, not the least of which is an understanding that stresses Christian gathering and Bible study. The blessed community is sorely needed in these times. Do not do life alone. One other story of unity. In the late 1950s, the old white church that sat across the street was no longer meeting our needs. A photograph of that last meeting shows every single seat is taken, absolutely packed. Those at the time, us, we were farmers and we were builders. But the idea to build was not universally agreed. These are rational, thrifty people, some of us. The story is told that some who voted against the idea in council were among the first on site for the construction. A cornerstone out there says 1961, but it took 4 years and some heavy equipment for the arches. And together, this is our past. Thank you, ladies. And this is our future. Modern for its time, space for all those classrooms we needed, a dedicated radio studio up in the balcony. And now it is renewed. A place to sing unto the Lord a new song. In the mid-60s, some wanted to save the old building. The trustees decided, in my understanding, that there was some disagreement, but again, the dissenting members took the lead in carrying out the decisions of the whole. One morning, the community gathered as walls were being pushed down. It was bittersweet to let the old white church go, but it was a letting go. So thank you, Isaac and David, for your help. Our history requires a brief epilogue. You can stay or sit, whichever you prefer. As you heard read this morning from 1 Corinthians 3, the Apostle Paul was no stranger to disagreements. Verse 4, when one says, I belong to Paul, and another says, I belong to Apollos, are you not all too human? Now, Paul doesn't tell the Corinthians who is right and who is wrong on points of understanding. He tells them to recognize that they all belong together, that they are all co-workers with Christ. In chapter 12, he uses the illustration of being baptized into one body. There are varieties of services. Verse 15, he says, if the foot would say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any part less part of the body. In another place, to the Philippians, chapter 4, he doesn't, in telling them who to follow, he doesn't mention leaders, but he tells them how to choose. Brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. We each have our functions. Back in chapter 3, Paul adds, for we are God's co-workers working together. You are God's field, God's building. Paul concludes, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one that has been laid. That foundation is Jesus Christ. And that, incidentally, was the motto of one Menno Simons, and a good motto for us, a congregation that happens to bear his name.